Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everybody and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
And my name is Peter.
Welcome back, Peter. How was your week?
It was lovely, thank you. I had a nice time not thinking about video games. Not because I don't like to think about video games, but it's just nice to do something different, isn't it?
It is. It's exhausting to think about games all the time.
All the time.
As we do.
Yeah. You know? Constantly. How was your week?
Switch off. Hey, it was pretty good, thanks. Got to play some stream games with James Jenkins. Philip stepped in, did a marvellous job on the podcast. It was nice. Had a wonderful week without you, quite frankly. Sad you're back, but we must persevere, mustn't we? It's E3!
Someone's beeping a car outside your...
Every conceivable noise is happening outside of my window in the quiet little area that I live. It has no through road, and yet, somehow, it is the loudest place in the NE postcode area currently.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's E3, Peter.
It's E3. Sound the E3 horn.
Oh, different horns there.
Yeah.
Slightly different horns.
Very exciting. I mean, E3 has... basically commenced by the time this video goes out, or this podcast goes out, hasn't it? Not a time of recording, but
Not a time of recording. It's Thursday, so tonight it's Summer Game Fest. We've done predictions, we're doing live stream reactions, we've got lists going out, we've got what happened at videos going out, all sorts of stuff. Yet, in spite of that, because, as Peter mentioned, we are recording before E3 kicks off, we can't talk about it. So next week will be our E3 special podcast. We recommend that all question submitters, and we'll get to that in a second, how you can submit questions, ask E3 related questions, announcement related questions. We'll go through all of it, talk about what we think of E3 2021, when the dust has settled on the on the whole event. But this week, it's a regular old podcast, which isn't so bad, but we do have a sponsor, don't we, Peter?
Of course we do. I don't know if you know, actually, Ben, but the Entertainment Software Association, the ESA, they've decided to diversify, not just in being... they don't want to just be an association about entertainment software anymore, but also entertainment hardware. So they're kind of starting a new branch, the EHA, where they're dealing with hardware stuff. First thing they want to do is create a special... like AI robot gaming buddy who will sit with you and do like couch co-op and stuff. And they've worked on a few iterations already. They've given him a name, but I don't want to dox him or anything. So let's just call him Keith, shall we, for now.
Keith. Okay.
Yeah. They had to go through a few different versions. You know, they did a sort of like beta build and stuff, but the version 3.0, I think, is ready for release. So, coming soon from the EHA, Keith 3. He's coming.
Wow. What advantages does Keith 3 have over Keith 2?
Well, they won't go into that because it's really top secret information. There were definitely no deaths at the EHA.
It doesn't kill anyone anymore.
It doesn't kill anyone anymore, or never did. Or never
Good.
Did. Not and
or,
never did. Or never
and,
did.
Or never did. Wow, so the ESA, not only responsible for E3, but having diversified and spun off the EHA, they've now got Keith 3 as
Keith
well.
Keith 3, he's coming. He's coming for you.
He's coming. Don't turn around. Keith 3 is already here.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, he sounds incredible. What's the RRP? When can I get him?
The RRP for Key 3 from the EHA is $299. Then I go and sit in my chair again.
And the whole place erupts. Wow, that sounds great. Can't wait to get one. Can't wait. So excited. Going to lock in my pre-order right now.
Excellent. That's good. Yeah. It's not real, Ben. Don't lock in a pre-order. It's not real. You'll waste your money.
You're terrible. I can't believe you did that.
I just saved you $2.99, so just be careful there.
But it was $2.99 I'd already made peace with losing in exchange for a fantastic robot companion that doesn't kill me.
No, well, maybe one day they will spin off and create Key 3.
Well, I'm a little sad, but never mind. One thing I can confirm is real, though, are our wonderful patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little, there's some beeping, do you hear that?
Yeah.
No, just someone reversing, just some big loud vehicle reversing. Where for as little as $1 per month, you can submit, stop it, you can submit questions for this podcast. That's patreon.com. I'm being thrown off by the beeping. patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Please do go and support us. We have other tiers available, all sorts of stuff. Where are we going to be walking this week, Peter?
How about, well, it's not really the E3 episode, so let's not walk in front of the like LA Convention Center or whatever.
What about Keith 3, otherwise known as the Kinderbot?
Yeah, okay. Just,
you remember the Kinderbot?
Not really, no. I just sort of, I kind of rolled with that punch, but
oh, okay.
The Kinderbot. Let me.
Yes, do you not remember? It was one of the edutainment consoles, and it was horrifying.
Oh, that was like one. A little robot. Oh, yeah, friend. I forgot it was called Kinderbot. I remember that.
I think
that
it's
guy.
Called Kinderbot. I'm
Casey
not sure.
The Kinderbot. He's really scary.
He's very frightening. Good. Well, people enjoy watching that. I'm sure you will. Before we get to question one, though, Peter, it's time to hear a little bit about triplejump.gg. Hello, everyone. As well as our extremely real and totally not fictitious in any way sponsor, we're officially partnered with PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo to sell their codes through our own website, triplejump.gg.
Here you can get everything from topping up your digital wallets to PlayStation Plus, Xbox Live Gold, Xbox Game Pass, and Nintendo Switch Online subscriptions, as well as Minecraft Mine Coins. Mine Coins, they'll be your coins any minute.
Nice one, Peter.
Yeah, thanks very much.
It's 100% legitimate, directly supports us, and provides you with the delightful digital currencies you're going to buy anyway. Visit triplejump.gg to browse our full stock.
Triplejump.gg. This is a real sponsor. Well, now it's time for question one. This is from Cameron Keywood.
Cameron Keywood, we know that one. He helped me get a platinum.
Oh, yeah, that one. He says, hi, boys. I use a renting software, a renting service. Sorry, I'm still thinking about Key 3, I think, with software. Hi, boys. I use a renting service, Boomerang Rentals, for some games these days, and it saved me money in this pandemic world and is becoming more popular. Do you think that game renting can make a comeback, and would you consider making the switch to renting big releases? Thank you, Cameron.
Ooh, good question.
Not just for your question, but for helping my friend Ben with his...
Yes, podcast. Thank you, Cameron. Appreciate it. Have you, I suppose a first question here, Peter, would be, have you ever used a rental service for games before? Because they definitely used to be popular.
They did. I have never rented a video game.
Big money Austin rolling in with his 50 P's.
Well, maybe that's because I don't have the big money and I don't want to... I mean, it doesn't mean I've got big money. It means that maybe I just sat around playing the same games for a while.
Just played Spyro forever.
Yeah. So I've never used a rental service such as Boomerang Rentals. That's not a sponsor. Or I never even sort of rented one casually from like the shop, the local game rental shop. I think that partly was because I lived in a village and there wasn't a place that I could easily rent games from.
Goggins' post office, they didn't have a great range, did they?
Well, they didn't have a great range of rental games, but Mrs. Goggins' post office was it was part of a cost cutter. That was the village shop. And for a time, they had DVD rentals there and actual PS1 games for sale.
Wow. That's incredible.
it was actually pretty incredible. We used to get, just walk from our house to the corner shop, and there would be PS1 games you could buy for like £15.
I'm so jealous.
They weren't always very good. Sometimes they were. I think I got Gauntlet mm-hmm. Legends from that shop, and that was a great okay. game. But it's probably years after it had come out. But no, I've never rented a game. But I can definitely see the appeal, particularly with a game that, if you're not sure about it, if it's a new release, or if it's something that's not had extensive coverage online, so maybe a bit of an obscure game, you might think, oh, I wonder if I can rent that and give it a go, because there's not much of a consensus available on the internet as to whether it's going to be something I would enjoy. So absolutely, there's a good reason to use rental services. And I mean, the questions really that Cameron's given us are, do we think it'll make a comeback, and would we consider making the switch? I think we are very, very fortunate boys in the sense that we probably won't really need to ever use a rental service for big releases, because generally we're able to sort of get them through the company.
Big money triple jump.
Absolutely. Although that said, we do sort of take turns on getting a copy of a game and being the kind of the lead on that game. So if, for example, something was coming out that I was down to get the bought copy via triple jump, you might think, oh, well, I kind of wanted to play that game too, and I don't know if, you know, might be something I want to give a go. Maybe it's not, so maybe I'll rent it. I don't know. So it doesn't necessarily mean we'll never rent stuff, but it certainly helps being in the position we are that we won't really have to generally. But do I think that game renting can make a comeback? I mean, in a way, the fact that everything's going more and more towards digital stuff, in some ways that makes it easier for people to rent. People like me who lived in a village in the countryside, because, as I say, I didn't have hardware rental available to me. But if there was a system online that I could just log into and get access to a game temporarily, then, you know, that's certainly an option. On the other hand, though, with things like Game Pass, that is essentially allowing you to rent, you know, dozens and dozens or hundreds of games while you've got the pass, if you see what I mean. So in some ways, that makes game rental redundant. If you're willing to splash the cash on something like Xbox Game Pass, you suddenly have all these games available to you for as long as you're paying that fee. So I don't know, maybe that will actually start to push game rental out the door a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I am actually in agreement. I think you've touched on most of what I was going to say there. I believe renting physical games will only be viable for as long as physical games are viable.
Yeah.
There will, I can confidently say, never be a system in place for digital games quite like there is for physical games, because, as you said, there are lots of services already available, like Game Pass, like PlayStation Now, where you do essentially, you have access to everything. You don't have to pay per title, although that could well change if companies want to squeeze more money out of us. You just get access to a huge library, and it lasts as long as your subscription does. Equally, PlayStation Plus, you know, make sure you add all those free games every month to your library, even if you don't want them, because you can download any of them at any point, again, as long as you're still subscribed to PlayStation Plus. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, that's the modern day digital version. But yeah, physical games, I'm in a way, I'm glad to hear that they're doing all right, because I have very vivid memories of cycling to Blockbuster and renting Mercenaries 2, and playing that. And I also was briefly subscribed to Love Film before that was purchased by Amazon, and turned into Amazon Prime Video or whatever the hell it was. And I rented a couple of games through that as well. And it does work, and it was a perfectly viable system. And for people who don't necessarily want to pay full price, but just want a week or whatever with the latest game, and they can finish it off in that time, then yeah, it does make sense. And I'm glad. I've never heard of Boomerang Games rentals even, but I am certainly glad they exist to fill that niche. But I don't know how long necessarily that they will be around.
You're right, because once physical games are essentially made obsolete by perhaps the next generation of consoles, then all that will be left is digital. And there are already things in place that kind of trump individual game rental when you've got this entire you know, library available for, I don't know what the price comparison would be like from renting one game versus subscribing to, say, PlayStation Now, but yeah, it's gonna probably not do good things for the rental market.
Possibly not, but we shall see.
We will.
Who knows where we're gonna go? I still like to predominantly buy physical games, although there was literally a moment a couple of nights ago where I was in a party chat on PS5 with a couple of friends, and they said, what do you want to do? Should we play some Warzone or should we play some Zombies? And I said, oh, well, can we play Warzone? Because if we play Zombies, I literally have to walk 3 feet to put the Black Ops disc in, and I can't be arsed. And so we played Warzone instead. So there are certainly, you know, we're reaching that turning point where the massive, inconceivable inconvenience of having to put a disc in a console is already becoming too much for me. So I don't know if I'm perhaps reaching the point where I start to pivot almost solely towards digital, but I love having game boxes on my shelf, and I don't know that that is necessarily going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I think I will always, we've kind of had this conversation before about physical and digital, but I would always probably want to have physical copies of games that already mean a lot to me, or will, I kind of know going into it straight away that it will mean a lot to me. For example, like the Reignited trilogy, you know, I ended up with a digital copy of that for like review purposes, but I bought a physical copy as well later on because I just wanted one on my shelf, you know, so things like that. I think I will always want that. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, Peter, it's time to move on to a groundbreaking segment we've never done before.
Yeah.
What's it called?
It's called What We Play In.
It's What We Play In time. Peter Austin, I want to hear about every stream you play in last week.
Well, yeah, I've been playing swimming in rivers, the River Tweed. I've been playing, did I play any like sort of games? I played the Kazoo game. Have you played that game where it's an actual board game that comes in a box where you get given a card with songs on it, and you have to play it on a kazoo, and people have to guess what you're playing.
I've never heard. I thought you were gonna say it's that game from the viral videos where you put a kazoo in your mouth, and then a friend hits you in the knee with a with like a saucepan, and then you go.
Yeah, that was a harmonica. That guy.
Oh right, I imagine it works with a kazoo. I don't know.
Probably
Peter Austin's wily. He could make it work.
But no, so I only got back home three or four days ago. So I didn't play much. Oh, I didn't play anything while I was away, of course. But in the meantime, I spent one evening just sorting my life out, because when you've been away from home, everything is suddenly needs assistance.
You need to wash everything.
You need to wash everything. You know, we've had a bit of extra work to do this week as well, preparing for various things. However, I have had two brief sessions last night and the night before, just playing a little bit of hard mode on Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. Jumped back into that. Mainly just so I could talk about having played a game on the podcast.
Right.
And I didn't want to play Resident Evil for reasons I've already said. We're playing a lot of that at the moment, and I'm looking forward to my new game plus, but I'm going to wait till we finish streaming it before I get resied out. So I just hopped back into that for a little bit, and I'm enjoying it. New game plus, that game as well, you can import your character from the like final save state of a previous run, and they have all their stuff, and they're all leveled up, and so that's fun. I'm enjoying that game a lot, and I'm really hoping they give the same treatment to the sequel as well. But that's really, other than things that people will have seen me playing on the channel this week already and you know about, that's all I've managed to play since I've been back from my Holly Bobs.
Well, you're easing back into it.
I am, and I'm sure I have a lot more to talk about next time. Ratchet and Clank, perhaps.
Absolutely.
What have you been playing, Ben?
I've been all over this week. I've played loads of different things. Ratchet and Clank is actually one of them. A Rift Apart releases, I think, today, actually, at the time of recording. It unlocks at 1 p.m. I have it downloaded, ready to go. So perhaps by the time this podcast is out, there may well be a Quipscope that went out on Friday. Who knows? We'll see. But yes, hopefully I'll have played some of that. Looks great. Reviews are good. Looking forward to playing it. I've played approximately 10 minutes of Silent Hill 1 via PlayStation Classic on my Vita. And I played, and I mean, goodness, it's a spooky game, but it wasn't the spooks that made me put it down and then delete it from the Vita. It was that the game relies rather heavily on R2 and L2, which the Vita does not have. And in place of that, you're meant to use the back touchpad as sort of like digital buttons or virtual buttons for L2 and R2. I don't know if it's just because I've got a knackered launch Vita or if it just doesn't work very well, but I could not reliably get L2 and R2 to work, which is pretty important for, I think, aiming and firing guns.
Oh, no.
So I struggled against the first enemy, got killed by it as I was like mashing the back touchpad desperately and looking up controls. And then I was like, this is going to be a terrible way to experience this game. So I got rid of it.
That's a shame.
It is a shame. It's definitely one that I still want to experience, though. Equally, Uncharted Golden Abyss, the Vita exclusive Sony Bend developed Uncharted game that's sort of very much the black sheep of the Uncharted family, is never really talked about. Mm. It's a game that I did enjoy when I played it through for the first time, obviously markedly not as good as the console ones. And again, I don't know if it was my Vita or if my standards of controller have been raised so much, but the dead zone on the right analog stick when aiming was insane. Like, I just couldn't really sort of accurately aim my gun at all, and I got a bit cross with it. And I think I was just in one of those moods where I was like, I was looking for reasons to not play this game, and I found one almost immediately. So I put it down, and I may well go back to it, but yeah, that was like, oh god, this is not as good as I remember. And even when I played it then, I didn't think it was the greatest thing in the world. So yeah, played a bit of that. Played some Warzone, won a game, by which I mean I was carried thoroughly by my team because I haven't played Warzone for a while, and they did a big update that reset all of my settings and control changes, which was awesome. So appreciated that very much. Booted up the PS3 and played through Resistance 1 and Resistance 3 co-op.
I saw that on social media that you've been playing.
They're so good. I'm not a huge fan of Resistance 2, but Resistance 1 is really interesting to go back to now, because there still at that point wasn't really standardized first person shooter controls. But it's still a great game with a really intriguing story, and like, it still looks pretty good. And Resistance 3 has just a way better story, and the guns are phenomenal in that game. Insomniac is always so good with weapons and crazy stuff like that. Still absolutely gutted that there's been no port of this trilogy whatsoever, and they are just abandoned on PS3. It's so sad. But starting them up again and playing through them with the tiny PS3 controller, which feels so archaic now, was a real delight. A really lovely to walk back down that memory lane. Really had a really nice time playing through them again, so I hope to see those. We see those in some kind of collection soon, maybe.
I really want to play Resistance. I think it looks like a lot of fun. And it's sort of slightly stylized, isn't it, a little bit? Like, it's not quite kind of... It's intentionally not quite photorealistic. It's got a little bit of a thing to it.
Yeah, there's a little bit of exaggeration. Like, the settings are largely realistic. But yeah, the character models and stuff, they've got an art style for sure.
Which is nice. I like that.
Yeah. No, me too. And it really gets around the whole, graphical limitations of the time. In co-op, I will say it was interesting going from seeing the cutscenes, which are all full screen, and then you go to split screen, and like, the gameplay fidelity just drops. It's so so pixelated. It's really, like, it's so impressive that they got it to run, because back then it was just, you know, we were talking about co-op games in the big discussion a couple of episodes ago. Back then it was just, yes, we need to have split screen co-op. We should like, that's what this game should have, because that's standard. But yes, it was quite remarkable having the game just sort of shrunk down quite so massively. But great games. Last night I platinumed Mass Effect 1, got a little annoyed at it because it does that really fun thing that video games mercifully don't do too much anymore, which is lock you out of side quests when you reach a certain point in the game and you can never come back to them. So there was a trophy for that was really irritating. I had to reload an earlier save to get it. But on the whole, I enjoyed that game. Very excited to play Mass Effect 2, one of my favourite ever games, with save data from the first game, which I've never been able to do before.
Yeah.
But I'll get to that after Ratchet & Clank, I think. This is a good time to hop into that game. But that is what I've been playing.
Wonderful. I'm also looking forward to playing all of the Mass Effect games for the very first time at some point.
Yeah.
I nearly started those this week. I was like, I want to play something, partly so I can talk about it on the podcast. And I was like, well, I really want to play this new Mass Effect trilogy. Well, I say new, this Mass Effect trilogy. And yeah. I thought, I won't, because I think with the busyness we've got with E3, I'm not going to be playing games in the evening for probably a few days over the next week or so. And I thought, that's probably the kind of game where I want to sort of stick with it and keep it up rather than have breaks of a few days. So I thought, let's not start that if I think I might not finish it. So
it's got some quirky controls like hold X to sprint and stuff. So if you're juggling games, it can get a bit confusing. Do you have it then? Have you bought the trilogy?
I've not bought it yet, no, but I'm going to, for sure.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Well, I look forward to hearing what you think of them, because they're great games, really good fun. Much preferred. Honestly, they eat Dragon Age's breakfast, and you can take that to the bank. I don't care. Don't dislike the video. Some people love Dragon Age. I've never been able to get into it. But space opera? Yes, please. I'll do that. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah. Let's move on to question two. From Richard Major, who says, perhaps you could rate E3 2021 out of 10 before and then after the event. This episode and the next episode, he says in parentheses. Thank you, Richard. This could be a fun thing to do. I know we said there's not going to be much E3 talk this week because we have nothing to talk about. But based on the sheer number of conferences that are coming up, and this is just, if I just have a look here, because we're only covering five of them on our channel, like the ones that we put... We perhaps are biased towards perceiving as the biggest ones. But you've got the Koch Primetime Gaming Stream, Summer Game Fest, IGN Expo, the official E3 2021 stream, Ubisoft Forward, Devolver Digital, Gearbox, Square Enix, the Future Games Show, Xbox, Bethesda, Nintendo, PC Gamer, Capcom. There's so much. There is so much.
Take-Two, Capcom, Razer, Nintendo, Bandai Namco. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just... goes on and on. So, absolutely, and it's exciting. It's not just the same level of excitement that you have because E3 is coming up and there's going to be a load of reveals and new information and so on games we already know about, but it's kind of got an extra touch to it in that we didn't get this last year, you know. So I know there were still, you know, a few kind of little mini conferences throughout the year and trailers and things, but it we didn't have the E3 feeling last year at all, because it officially wasn't happening. So it's kind of a double whammy, really, in terms of excitement. So in that sense, my anticipation is high. I'm really looking forward to it. It'll be nice just to sit down and shoot the plops with you and the community when we're watching live. However, I'm trying to go in with a little bit of I don't know if trepidation is the right word, but I think it's worth bearing in mind that these companies have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic over the past 18 months. And therefore, although things are now improving in the present, these things take time to trickle through in terms of, you know, stuff like game development. That's going to be still being affected to a certain extent. And I think it's worth bearing in mind that perhaps we might get lesser offerings than we ordinarily would have done in a quote-unquote normal E3. So I'm trying to kind of temper some of my expectations and bear in mind that, you know, the workflow has been affected over the past year or so.
Yeah.
So personally, going into this, I'm going to rate it a very happy, fine, contented average of 7.5 out of 10.
Oh, you're going for the 0.5 scale, huh?
Well, only because I thought 7 seems a bit harsh. Like, I'm very excited for it, but 8 seems a bit overexcited because, as I say, I think there might be some level of like, oh, that's a bit less than what I was thinking. So I did go for the 75% is what I was thinking rather than 7.5 out of 10. But yeah, so 7 out of 10 I'll go with if you want an integer.
Sure. I have also actually put 7 out of 10. Mm. Just because this is the podcast where there must be no disagreement ever. We are always on the same page.
No, 7.5 out of 10 is what I'm saying.
I'm going to go for 7.4, flip off, yeah? No, I think sometimes it's nice to listen to podcasts where people agree, but you know what? Whatever, each to their own. Yes, E3 has somewhat been dragged through the mud over the past, I would say, 2 years, because the one in 2019 didn't go great, and I'm not talking about announcements, but in terms of PR, from a PR perspective, wasn't that well received after they leaked all the journalists' information and so on and so forth. I think it may have benefited them, because people always like an underdog story. Not that the ESA are underdogs. They are very wealthy. But I think people want to see it succeed. People don't want it to fail. Mm. And also, there is that excitement. As you said, we didn't really get anything like this last year. We had weird, scattered stuff throughout the summer that was hard to keep track of. And yes, having it all concentrated in one place can be massively overwhelming, and a lot of announcements can get drowned out, and you will miss stuff. But having it all at the same time is way better. And I think, especially as a big PlayStation fan, the fact that PlayStation aren't there, I think also helps with my expectations going in, because I don't really have any... It sounds weird to say. I don't really have many high hopes for it.
Yeah,
like
I'm
going
in
just looking forward to having a good time and seeing all the announcements. Like, there's nothing there that I am personally hugely invested in. And in fact, in slight disagreement to what you said about the companies being affected by COVID, they have been affected by COVID. That's not what I'm disagreeing with.
Yeah.
Last year, that perhaps would have rang far more true, in that we would have either had things that should have been announced, not announced, and, you know, perhaps things shown off that were then delayed for ages. However, as we are all sort of widely in agreement that 2022 is going to be absolutely flipping bonkers for games that have been delayed out of 2021, I have a feeling that E3, this one, could be absolutely insane, packed to the rafters with loads of announcements that we should have got last year that were potentially sat on for the sake of COVID.
I was just going to say, I hadn't thought about the kind of the backlog of that stuff that wasn't shown. I was more thinking like, oh yeah, some stuff that maybe they were working on for 2022 was maybe delayed in 2020. So this year it might have ordinarily been revealed, but it might have been delayed, da 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 da. But you're right, like, I hadn't even considered that the stuff we didn't see last year is probably due this year. So yeah, that's a good point.
Well, Peter, you're right too, because COVID will still affect this stuff. And even if it's announced now, it may not be ready anytime soon. But certainly things that were announced last year that we haven't seen anything of, say Harry Potter games, I'm completely blanking now. There's going to be a lot of stuff that was announced last year that we haven't really seen anything of for over a year, likely solely due to COVID, and there being no central place to announce this stuff. So we could be seeing, even though it's not necessarily new announcements, we could be seeing a lot of footage for games that people are hyped for that we just don't know a great deal amount about yet. I'm going in expecting nothing and excited to just go along with the madness and enjoy it. And I think that's probably the best way to consume this kind of event.
Mm, yeah, I'd forgotten about the fact that, I hadn't really forgotten about Harry Potter, but that might be something that I hadn't considered, that might be at E3, which it may well be.
Could be, to be honest.
Like, we're getting there. I think it was supposed to be released this year, so it would make sense for them to show something this year and release it next year. So that's another one I'm excited for.
There's a complicated merger going on at the moment between Warner Bros. Parent company, and they're selling off different things and stuff. We talked about it vaguely before, but now it's actually happening. Don't know what's going to go on with this sort of stuff, or even who will represent it, but I believe Warner Brothers has a presence at this E3, so we'll see what comes out. Mm-hmm. It's going to be exciting though either way, and again, make sure you follow along with our schedule, which is about to be updated at the time of recording, because some of the times are wrong, because time zones weren't made clear in companies' announcements, and some of them said GMT when it is in fact BST, so it's an hour later. But there we go.
But as Ben says, stick with us for all of the important E3 news, Do you see where I'm going with this?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, sort of.
And stick with this podcast literally every week until the end of time for weird news.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Weird news time. Time for weird news. Peter, what have you got this week?
I've got a slightly tenuous weird news here in that it definitely did... Oh, have I closed it? I had it open in a tab before. Hang on, let me click it. I've got it in my document here, in my notes. It did affect the gaming sphere, but it also affected lots of other things too. But the write-up is on PC Gamer, so it definitely counts. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I'm justifying it. So this is according to PC Gamer, written by Alan Dexter. It's a great name. Who says, this week's internet blackout was caused by a single user updating their settings.
Oh, good. Okay.
So you'll be aware of this. I know you're aware of this, Ben, and I'm sure pretty much everyone listening was in some way affected or noticed that there was an internet blackout on Tuesday, the whatever of June 8th.
Yes.
This is a bit more about that. Little subtitle here. A bug, dormant since mid-May, was triggered by a very specific user configuration update. So here we go.
Okay.
Fastly, one of the internet's largest content delivery networks, CDN, went down this Tuesday, resulting in millions of users being unable to access certain websites. 85% of the network covered by Fastly returned errors on Tuesday morning, and it was all caused by a single user configuration update that uncovered a bug that had laid dormant in Fastly's infrastructure since mid-May. It doesn't actually list examples of websites that went down, but I mean, PC Gamer went down. They do say that towards the end of the article. Reddit was affected. What else? There were a few big websites that I don't think Twitter was, because people were tweeting about Reddit being down, but Amazon, I think, as well. It was a pretty devastating thing for a short time. In an interview with The Guardian, the head of infrastructure and engineering at Fastly, Nick Rockwell, explained what had actually happened to bring down its services and also apologised for the disruption. It feels a rare thing for such a big company to be so transparent about this, but it's certainly something to welcome. Content delivery networks operate on the principle that the internet is faster and more stable if the users are physically closer to them. This results in... What does that mean? That's weird.
Closer to the internet.
Or to Fastly. Closer to the content delivery networks, I guess. This results in faster downloads, better security, and a host of other features. It also means there's a point of failure if something goes wrong, though. And that's exactly what happened on June the 8th. This is a quote. On May the 12th, we began a software deployment... that introduced a bug that could be triggered by a specific customer configuration under specific circumstances, Rockwell told The Guardian. early June 8th, a customer pushed a valid configuration change that included the specific circumstances that triggered the bug, which caused 85% of our network to return errors. Essentially, a bug had been introduced to the system on May the 12th, but had laid dormant until a customer updated their settings on June the 8th, which triggered the flaw, taking down most of the internet with it, including PC Gamer, for many users. Fastly spotted the problem within a minute, and, quote, within 49 minutes, 95% of our network was operating as normal. There's a financial impact to users not being able to access sites, of course, and SEO agency Reboot estimates that the downtime cost Amazon $32 million in sales.
Oh no, poor Amazon.
Poor Amazon. I hope they recover from this.
Make sure you go and buy stuff from Amazon to support them.
Yeah, don't go to your local shops this week.
Don't do that. They're going to be struggling.
So there you go. One user changed some of their settings and it cascaded into most of the internet.
I like to think that they just updated their profile pic.
Yeah, to it's a like picture of new, like troll
hashtag new profile pic, and then the internet crashes. What does that say about you and your profile pic? That's what I want to know. Yeah. Wow, that is very weird.
Isn't it? Yeah, brilliant. Well, what's your weird news? In fact, I know what your weird news is, but haven't read it yet. Because this was sent to me. Ben and I send just a topic to each other before the podcast so that we don't end up bringing the same story. So we're like, my weird news is about the internet going down. And Ben says, okay, mine's not. And Ben has given me his topic, and it was DM'd to me by, let me get the name.
Well, I've got it here.
You've got it.
Michael Thompson at Doodlebug Inc., but the O's in Doodle are zeros.
So thank you, Michael, for sending that. You did the right thing, sending it to just one of us.
You've done the right thing, Michael. We're proud of you.
You sent it to me, but then Ben had already messaged me and said, I'm going to do this story. And I was like, okay, I've been sent that, but I'm not going to read it. So there we go.
Okay, thank you, Michael, for sending this in.
Thank you, Michael.
This is from Kotaku, and Ian Walker. Report: Quantic Dream executives cry, ask if they can lie during recent court appearance.
I really want to know the context here.
I'm just going to give you a second to just absorb that. Now,
that's
We love Quantic Dream and their weird, wonky, sometimes great games. Heavy Rain, Beyond Two Souls, Detroit Become Human, Fahrenheit, or Inigo Prophecy. And Dwayvid Quage in particular, a very challenging auteur, shall we say, who doesn't have the best reputation. Here we go. Quantic Dream executives recently appeared in a Paris court as part of its ongoing defamation lawsuit against French publications Le Monde and Mediapart. But according to a May the 31st report, things didn't go smoothly for the studio behind games like Heavy Rain and Detroit Become Human. Independent French union Solidaire Informatique reports that co-CEOs David Cage and Guillaume de Fondomier, which is just so fantastically French, both exhibited strange behavior during their testimonies. Cage allegedly cried on the stand, stomping his feet, screaming about interferences to his business and damage to his honor, and eventually storming out of the courtroom altogether.
Wow.
How David Cage is that? If you could describe David Cage as a person just from his games, I think it would be that guy who cries and stamps his feet like a toddler.
Yeah, I think so.
That's
just
him.
Just yelling Sean to the room.
Yeah.
Sean.
Yeah.
Sean.
LeSean, actually.
LeSean.
LeSean. Near the end of his own testimony, de Fondomier reportedly looked at the judges and asked, "But I'm not under oath, so I can lie?" before claiming Quantic Dream was seriously damaged by the stories about its toxic work environment. Solidaire Informatique says de Fondomier, this is getting harder to say, didn't provide proof of these damages. Quantic Dream did not respond to Kotaku's request for comments. So, and then it goes on to detail what the lawsuit is about. Basically, back in 2018, there were several reports published in French press concerning working conditions at Quantic Dreams and how it was awful working work culture was rife with toxic behavior, the most prevalent being a massive internal trove of photoshopped images depicting employees in sexual situations and altered to look like Nazis.
Worse.
Just so much worse. These images reportedly dated all the way back to 2013 and were sometimes even displayed in open areas of the Quantic Dream offices. So they...
That's insane.
It is bonkers. It's awful, if true.
Well, yeah, awful.
Allegedly, because the court case is still ongoing. But yes, they are suing these publications for defamation.
Right.
Although scuttlebutt in the industry is that Dwayvid Quaid in particular is a bit of a dick.
Mm.
And that seems pretty in keeping with him as a person, regardless of the art that he makes. The man is very much separate from that and should be... judged accordingly. But yes, it's the weird part is those two's reaction in court, asking if they can lie. Asking the judges if they can lie and stamping their feet and storming out and screaming and crying.
If it occurred to you, like, oh, hang on, I'm not under oath here. I could probably lie, couldn't I? Because I'm not actually under oath and, you know, there were no consequences. I wouldn't then say... excuse me, because I'm not under oath, am I allowed to lie?
Can I lie?
Here,
is that allowed? Can
I
legally lie?
I'd just do it if I was going to, which I would, of course, would never do. But you know, if the thought occurred to me, I would just do it rather than check.
Flipping bonkers, absolutely bonkers. I do not understand. Anyway, there we are. That is my weird news.
Very weird.
Very strange. So we'll see what the outcome of that case is. But given that the line Solidaire Informatique says de Fondomier didn't provide proof of these damages, I think they really don't have much of a case here. They're just trying to put on a good face and say, no, we didn't do that, rather than saying, yes, actually, we did do the Nazi and sexual images. We did. We're so bad. But we're not going to quit because we're white men. That's it.
All things considered, it sounds like it's not been very nice working in game development in France for a while, because that's some of those things are exactly what was reported at Ubisoft Montpellier.
Michel Ancel and stuff.
And the rest of Ubisoft.
Not
anything. Some of it was like lumped in with sexual misconduct that was happening at the same time, but that I think at Montpellier it was more just like toxic environment, like people shouting at each other and.
It's a symptom of game development, isn't it? Which is very sad. Thankfully, though, a lot of it being called out. So hopefully that changes. Again, very, very limited experience in game development. I did not encounter any such issues. But then again, it is worth pointing out that I am white, straight, and a man. So there's a good chance that if there were such issues, I wouldn't have fallen afoul of them. But I imagine
you were
there
probably doing them, Ben.
Just subconsciously being a terrible man. I'm sure that there are, and I know for a fact there are fantastic and good people in game development. There are great studios with great cultures, but yes, these issues do exist and they are worth acknowledging and addressing and taking care of for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially if the people at the top are crying and screaming in court.
It's probably worth
stamping their feet. What is that? But my honor!
Please.
Let's move on.
I suppose we should. It's time for question three. This is from Dan Scott, who says, with Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart coming out this Friday, I've noticed many on social media proclaiming that it'll be their first experience with the franchise and asking others if there's anything they need to know about previous entries. With this said, have you boys ever dived into a franchise, that is, one with a continuity and not self-contained stories like Final Fantasy or the Tales series, at an unusual point within the series? And did a series ever pull you in so much that you felt the urge to go back and marathon earlier games in the series? For me, I played Yakuza Like a Dragon last year, and so I spent much of lockdown three playing my silly Japanese crime dramas. Much love to all the team from Dan Scott. Thank you, Dan Scott.
Say hello to your Uncle Barry for me.
Yes, indeed.
Is Barry Scott still alive?
I think he is. I think you're thinking of Billy Mays, who sadly is no longer with
us. Yes, that, yeah, they are sort of all part of the same crime family, aren't
they? Cut from the same cloth, yeah.
Crimes against products.
Cut from the same extremely absorbent cloth that you can wring out.
Only $9.99!
So, Dan, it's a good question, thank you. I'm actually a bit of a stickler, meseeks, for not going into a series if I've not experienced the previous entries. I don't like going in halfway through things. I'm the same with movie series, which is mostly or partly why I've not seen a lot of the Avengers and like Marvel movies, because although I know there are certain entry points where you can go in there if you want to, I just didn't like the idea of going into like the first Avengers film without having seen Iron Man, for example, and things like that.
Yeah.
So, and I'm the same with gaming. So there are probably a couple of exceptions. I will be jumping into Ratchet and Clank, having only ever played the first game. I've not played any other Ratchet and Clank games. I've not even played the remake that they did, which I might do because I've got it on my library. I think it was.
Yeah. It's part of the Plus collection.
It was free
last year as well, maybe at some point.
So I might give that a go just to refresh my memory, actually. But I'll be sort of doing that to an extent, having only played one of the previous games. And also, I guess, to an extent, Oblivion and Fallout 3 sort of count. That's a bit of a loose one because they're self-contained stories, but they do tie in to previous. You know, there's like lore and stuff that kind of crosses over. So there's maybe an argument to say that those are the case. But I suppose that is kind of where my exceptions are rooted. So with Oblivion and Fallout 3, those were the first games in that series that were made available to me on console. So that is probably the only time that I will go into a series halfway through. You know, if suddenly a series makes its way over to a platform that I own, then I'll be willing to hop in there. Like The Witcher 3, for example. I'm going to play that eventually without having played the first two. And that's for pretty much the same reasons. But yeah, if there was a game series out there where the previous entries were available on a console that I owned, then I would be inclined to give them a go beforehand. It's just something that I've always done, really.
Yeah, it makes total sense. It does make total sense. I suppose that's where the question comes from, right? Is that it's unusual.
Yeah.
It's unusual to start in the middle.
And I have been thinking, is there going to be anything in Ratchet that I need to know? Any characters or like kind of major plot points that I've missed? So I might do a cursory Google about that before I play the game.
A great point. I think you should largely be fine, because I'm doing exactly the same thing. I've played various Ratchet and Clanks throughout the years. I did finish the 2016 remake / movie tie-in.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever really sat down and played a proper Ratchet and Clank from start to finish before, just sort of dabbled in it at friends' houses and stuff. It's never really been a series that I was massively interested in until it was made somewhat flagship by, I think, the raising of the profile of Insomniac as a developer, perhaps.
Yeah.
It feels bigger now than it used
to. It does. Yeah.
And a lot of I have a friend who's a longtime fan of Ratchet and Clank, and is beside himself with excitement for this new one. And I imagine him and many other people will listen to us talking about it and see people hopping in now, thinking, "Oh, you flipping posers!"
Yeah.
I was here through Ratchet and Clank Full Frontal Assault and Up Your Arsenal
that
kind of stuff. and the PSP spin-offs and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I suppose Ratchet and Clank is one. I'm very much like you in that I do try to start at the beginning of a series when I'm getting into it. I have a couple of examples, though, of ones where I did hop in halfway through. Mass Effect 2 being one of them.
Yeah.
Although, it wasn't really my choice because Mass Effect 1, at the time, was not on PS3.
Exactly, yeah.
And as of this month, I have gone back and played Mass Effect 1. So there we go. Equally, Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes, the tiny little demo, which purists will argue, you know, it's got endless replayability because there's like different missions and different ways you can approach the base, but it's like, okay, but they did charge a lot of money for it, and that's not fair. I played that. I covered it for Push Square before it came out. I went to like a review event, and I think I've told this story before. I was shocked that I rolled credits in the allotted time of the session.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm just going to play a bit and write a preview. And the gameplay of that, despite its short length ultimately hampering the score I gave it and what I thought of it overall, the gameplay was so good that I was like, I really, really want to get into Metal Gear Solid, and I've wanted to for ages. So after playing Ground Zeroes, throughout that summer before 5 properly released, I went back and played 1, 2, and 3. And I started 4, but never got much further than that. But 1, 2, and 3, I think, are the major important ones for 5 because of its setting and time period. So, yeah, I'd say that's one that I definitely started near the end and went back to the beginning. One that I am breaking the rules ever so slightly and choosing a series that doesn't have self-contained stories are the WWE games, which
right.
is a bit, and you know, I know you could say, you know, FIFA, I played FIFA 20 and I went back and played FIFA 95 or whatever it was.
Whoa.
But
yeah,
the WWE games, I sort of played them over the years. And then when I got back into wrestling at the beginning of, it would have been like 2012 ish thereabouts. I played WWE 12, the game of that year, and then I played WWE 13, and then I went back and just sort of got a bit obsessed, and I played through all of the SmackDown versus Raw games from like 2007 through 2011, and that's really fun. It's fun to go back and experience sort of the story of these games, not necessarily from a narrative perspective, but just to see how the gameplay evolves and, you know, new ideas that come and go as the series progresses. Especially an annualized series, you know. I imagine Assassin's Creed is if they weren't so long, that would be a fascinating one to go back and just see, you know, how it's changed throughout the years by hopping through the different games. But yeah, that's it. Those are my ones.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I was trying to think if any of the ones that I have played have made me go back and play previous games. With Fallout, I don't think that really. Obviously, the early Fallout games are kind of top-down, isometric things, so it's a different genre entirely. I'm sure it's still very interesting in terms of lore and stuff, but I've never felt compelled to play Fallout 1 and 2. But yeah, with Oblivion and Skyrim, I have always wanted to pick up Morrowind and give that a go, and maybe one day I will, but there's far too much to play in the meantime.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Morrowind looks like a lot of fun.
Does. I'd like to play Morrowind. But you got to get that Game Pass, my friend, if you want to play that Morrowind on a console.
Uh-huh.
Are you ready, Peter, for something large? It is. Have you got your paper?
Yeah.
The big discussion. It's big discussion time. This week's big discussion comes courtesy of Kat with a K, who says, sometimes you just need to start and finish a game in an evening to do something different. What very short games, 1 to 5 hours, would you recommend playing? Thank you, B and TP, Cat.
Thanks, Kay, for your question.
Thanks, Kay.
I have thought of a few sort of older games. It's been a while, really, since I've sat down and played a game that would qualify here. I've played a few games that are maybe sort of 6 hours. Like, I don't think Little Nightmares and Little Nightmares 2 quite count. You could probably play them through in a night if you really, really rushed through it and forced yourself and knew where you were going if you'd already played it before, but I left those out. But Limbo is one. On my first run of Limbo, it probably took me much longer than... I know it took much longer than a single evening, but it's the kind of game where if you know roughly what you're doing, where you're going, and how the game works, you could absolutely get through that in an evening. And I think that's a very interesting sort of game to play at night, perhaps, when you're on your own. It's sort of... It's not so spooky that you feel spooked, but it's certainly atmospheric. It's, you know, that's the kind of game I could play in the dark and not be scared, but certainly be affected in some way by the atmosphere. So I'd recommend that. There are some relatively short walking sims. Everybody's Gone to the Rapture could definitely be finished in a few hours if you didn't stop too long to smell the roses. Likewise, a game that I really, really enjoyed streaming, and admittedly it took me probably 3 or 4, well, maybe about 3 streams, so that's 6 hours or so. But again, I was really going for completionism and stopping to smell the roses, talking to chat and stuff. But a game I really enjoyed playing on stream was Little Inferno.
That's a nice one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the game on... I think it's only available on PC and Mac, I guess, but maybe it's not. Where you spend almost the entire game just looking at a sort of fireplace, furnace, incinerator thing, and you just buy stuff and burn it But there's kind of more to it than that. You have to sort of experiment and burn things together. And there's all these sort of interesting, wacky effects. And you receive correspondence from people next door, or the weatherman, or the person in charge of the company that you're buying all the stuff from. And there's this weird world that it's set in where, like, outside it's really snowy and everyone in every house is actually just sitting in front of their fireplace burning stuff and sort of enjoying themselves, but also it feels really kind of dark and apocalyptic as well. So, and it's, but it's got that kind of, it's got a sort of coziness to it. That would be a really nice evening game as well, I think, just to sit on your own, listen to the music and burn things. So Little Inferno is well up there for me.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good shout. I harp on about it all the time, but Oxenfree is such a good game and people should play it and buy it. I actually discovered it from a fantastic list that PlayStation Access did about games that you can complete in one sitting. Because I was very much in that mindset at the time. I was like, yes, I would love some inspiration for games that I can just sit down and finish in one go. And Oxenfree had me absolutely hooked. And I may well have talked about what it roughly concerns previously, but it's sort of, it's presented from a side-on perspective. It's all fully voice acted and you can choose your responses. You play as a character that is something of an outsider from the popular kids, and there's meant to be this thing that happens, I believe, after you might be a high schooler, you might be in college, I'm not entirely sure. But basically there's a, there's sort of a tradition where a group of you go to a nearby sort of abandoned island and get drunk and just like have a fire on the beach and stuff and like have a barbecue or whatever. You go to this island this time. There aren't many people there in terms of your schoolmates or whatever. And then you start picking up weird radio signals and it all gets a bit spooky and strange. And there's like a weird sort of psychological horror vibe going on. Like things start repeating themselves and the radio you've got is interacting with this strange artifact. And it's really good. Like it was really gripping and just spooky enough that it wasn't upsetting and that you had to put it down, but spooky enough to keep you on the edge of your toes. You know, it kept me well and truly gripped and intrigued all the way to the end. And you can finish it in one sitting. I want people to play this game. It's and that studio is so good. They also did After Party in 2019, which was one of my games of the year. So good. They're such a good studio. Please go check out Oxenfree. Oxenfree 2 is coming soon as well, which I don't know how that's going to work, but I will play it. By God, I'll play it. Besides that, as Peter said, walking simulators, you can't go wrong with those. Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, Dear Esther, Firewatch, What Remains of Edith Finch is fantastic. So good. Go and play that. And beyond that, I suppose, apart from, because it's largely indie games that fit into this category quite neatly, which I do appreciate, because there are some indie games that are roguelikes, or, you know, you've got your super challenging ones like Super Meat Boy or your Binding of Isaacs that you can just play forever. And as we've discussed on the podcast before, that's not really either of our kinds of games. So I do appreciate an indie game that is self-contained and like has a story and wraps up within 3 or 4 hours or whatever. Like, that's great. That's perfect. It's all I want. But beyond that, maybe perhaps a Telltale series. There's plenty of them. You can finish an episode in 2 to 3 hours. And sometimes I find that, because I can't play, in my experience of playing Telltale games, I can't play two episodes back to back. It's like, it's too much. It feels like too much of an undertaking. But certainly playing one episode a day or just in an evening is perfect. Like it's ideal for that. And there is really something to be said for games that are designed that way. And I suppose the same goes for Life is Strange. And what is it? The other one they did, Tell Me Why. That was a recent one as well. Mm-hmm. I think it's Tell Me Why, which I believe is free during Pride Month on the Microsoft Store.
Really?
And I have grabbed it because I would like to play it. So go get that too. Mm. So yeah, there's plenty there. And I think that there is really something to be said for just being able to bash out a game in a few hours. It's a real sense of pride and accomplishment, as EA would say.
Well, I was trying to think of kind of something a bit more mainstream, like maybe if there are any non-indie version and non-indie games that I could think of. And I've just remembered, actually, I once accidentally completed Portal in one sitting. Portal 1. It's shorter than you remember. And I sat down thinking, because I had Portal 2 in my mind. It's kind of my most recent memory of playing a Portal game, which, you know, has a lot more to it. And I sat down and was like, oh, I've not played Portal in a while. I'm going to give that a go. And I was assuming it would take me at least a couple of sittings. And you can actually get through that thing really quickly in like maybe 3 hours or something. It helps to have played it before and understand all the mechanics from the get-go. But yeah, that's another one. If anyone's not played Portal and they're thinking, oh, well, it's probably a bit long and complicated, it's anything but, certainly, the first game. So that's one to try.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there we are. That is the podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. Of course, let us know what you think of all the things we've spoken about. How excited are you for E3? I mean, how are you enjoying E3?
Well, yeah.
Because it's happening right now. Anyway, we've got loads of stuff coming up. We'll talk about it in a minute. Peter's now going to tell you where you can find us.
We are on YouTube and Twitch at Team Triple Jump. That's youtube.com and twitch.tv/Team Triple Jump. Pretty much all of our E3 coverage will be via, well, I say pretty much, I mean, actually all of our E3 coverage will be via YouTube. That's both our live streams that we're doing at the time and the sort of breakdown and the discussion and stuff we're doing afterwards, and some lists about E3 and all that kind of stuff. But we do stream on Twitch as well normally, so go check that out. If you've got Amazon Prime, one of the benefits of that is that you get a free Twitch sub. So maybe consider spending that on us, if you like. Thank you to Lord Brotovich, Mads Didactyl, and Trowling Badger, who moderate our streams on both YouTube and Twitch. Our social media platforms are twitter.com and facebook.com, /Team Triple Jump. Luke Eldon is looking after Facebook for us. Thank you, Luke. Patreon.com/Team Triple Jump is where you can go to access all of our Patreon tiers, including being able to ask questions on this podcast, early worst games ever, etc. Lots more as well. The website is triplej.mup. That's triplej.mp. If you go to triplej.mup/Discord, that will send you straight to our Discord, which is modded by Jack, Joe, and Hollow Eyes. triplej.mup/podcast will send you to a place where you can download the audio version of this podcast if you're watching on YouTube right now. triplej.mup/VODs will send you over to our VODs channel on YouTube, where all of our VODs get uploaded. And finally, you can go to triplejumpshop.com or triplej.mup/shop to access our shop. You can follow at triplejumpshop on Twitter. There is a new drop coming. We are talking with our merch people about it. It's coming, we promise. We can't tell you when exactly, but it's coming soon.
We've seen designs, and we've seen them for a while.
We've seen all of the designs now, I think.
They are pretty much ready. We're just finalizing stuff. So, yeah. We're finalizing stuff, so get ready. It is on its way. You can follow Peter on Instagram and Twitter at @ThatPeterAustin and myself just on Twitter at @Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, streams every Monday, Thursday, and Friday. Thursday being the joint stream, Blaze It on YouTube, Monday and Friday being solo streams on Twitch. The joint stream this week was on Tuesday, actually, so curveball. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everyone else. This is a Worst Games Ever week. Podcast is every Saturday, and we do shows once every other week or thereabouts. Why not leave us a review on iTunes? It helps something to do with algorithms. This week, Peter, E3 coverage out the wazoo. Go check it out. YouTube.com/Team Triple Jump/live. That's where you can find it. We'll be there reacting to the big boys. Well, at this point, your Square Enixes, your Bethesda and Xboxes, and your Nintendos, because the other ones will be done. No, tonight we're doing Ubisoft, if you're listening immediately. So see you there.
It will be tonight.
Hopefully see you there. It's also Worst Games Ever week, isn't it?
So that will be available for everyone tomorrow at time of release of this podcast, or Sunday if you're watching a little bit later. As we say, it was available for patrons of the Hot and Fresh tier on Friday evening. So if you want to get early Worst Games Ever, head to patreon.com/Team Triple Jump.
Yeah, do so. Do so. Finally, of course, triplejump.gg. Go check it out for all your currencies and so on. It does help us. We really appreciate it. Finally, Peter, the sponsor, what we got?
Coming soon from the Entertainment Hardware Association, EHA, Key 3 is coming to get you. Right
yes.
now.
I was waiting for him to get me. That's what it was. Okay. That's what that pause was. Wonderful. Well, run everyone and lock your doors as well. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.